some auspiciousness, you know. It was really, wow, it was really, that was also one of those experiences which I really wouldn't want to miss in my life, and which actually took a lot away also some of my fear of death, just witnessing, you know, how a person leaves in a very glorious way. And you realize it's actually not such a big deal. You know, no, it's not. We've done it so many times, you know, and we just need some help. We need some support, you know, at that time especially, you know. So in any case, I saw this Brahmachari there in Mayapur, Bhaja Govinda Prabhu, and I thought, all right, let me go to him and share a few things, you know, which I had just realized when I accompanied my father. Because often even amongst devotees, they find it not so easy to deal with the situation and what to say and how to encourage a person. And people often get all sentimental and, oh, how do you feel? And, you know, and they don't really know how to relate from soul to soul and really encourage the person to leave, you know. So anyway, this Bhaja Govinda Prabhu, it was quite an unusual situation because he was relatively young. He was only 35 years old. And he really wanted to stay in this world. He just had such a strong willpower to stay and not go. And he was convinced he could be cured, you know, even though his body was so emaciated, so skinny. I had never seen such a skinny body, you know. It was really like a skeleton just covered with skin, and these big eyes were beaming. I mean, it was almost creepy, you know, seeing him, you know. And people didn't even recognize him, you know. And when people came and had kirtan in his room, some were just breaking down in tears, you know, seeing how his body had changed, you know. So in any case, Bhaja Govinda, he didn't want to leave. He was really determined to stay. And that also gave me this realization how powerful the mind is. If the mind wants to stay, you can hang around in a completely useless body for quite some time, you know. And the doctors are amazed. How can this person still be alive? He should be gone already, you know. He hasn't been eating for 2 months and, you know, but still he's hanging around there in just a pile of bones type thing, you know, almost like Hiranyakashipu, you know. As we know, he was performing these austerities, you know. When I saw Bhaja Govinda, I realized, yes, it is actually possible, you know, to like Hiranyakashipu, by the strength of his austerities, his mind was so strong that, you know, his body was already eaten up by ants, and there was just an anthill covering some bones there, and he was still hanging around in that body, you know. So Bhaja Govinda was not far away from this, you know. Yes. So, and I was trying to take his mind to the spiritual world. I bought this big Krishna art book with these nice paintings, you know. And it's actually a very nice way, you know, to take the mind of a person to the spiritual world. Like Krishna was, Prabhupada was saying, these paintings are like windows into the spiritual world, you know. And I think in many cases, it's much easier than concentrating on hearing, you know, by somebody reading or something. So much more difficult when you're in pain and so on. But just looking at these beautiful paintings, it takes very nicely the mind to the spiritual world. So I spend every day an hour or something with him, showing him pictures and trying to convince him that it's time to leave, you know. And I was saying to him, look at your body, Prabhu, you know, it's time to leave. Oh, I'm all right, you know. Things are not so bad, you know. and then he was saying, I'm waiting for Krishna to give me a sign. And I said to him, well, I think he is giving the sign, you know. I mean, you ended up here in Mayapur. He only wanted to come for a couple of days and then go back to South India and do some treatments. But just in those few days he was in Mayapur, his health was decreasing so fast that there was no talk about him leaving, you know. So Krishna had really perfectly arranged it that he came to Mayapur, you know. But he couldn't even see that. Oh, well, there's so many people here in Mayapur, you know. What's the big deal of me being here in Mayapur? So he just couldn't see, you know. So and then at one stage I asked him, I said, you must have that feeling that you still have something important to do in this world. And he said, yes, I am the Bhakta leader in Kiev. That was his answer. I am the Bhakta leader in Kiev. And he was the Bhakta leader in Kiev. And he was saying, who's going to take care of all these Bhaktas? I am the Bhakta leader. And that's when I realized, oh, that's what happens, you know, when we hang on to these false designations. As long as we think I am the Bhakta leader, difficult to go. And I was trying to tell him, no, Prabhu, you're not the Bhakta leader. You're just the servant of the servant. Leave it up to Krishna. What service he wants to give you. Maybe he's got some other plan. You know? Leave it up to Krishna. Just accept that position of servant. Then it's pretty easy to go. If we identify with being servant, then we can say, okay, Krishna, I'm yours. Whatever service you want to give me, I'm ready to go wherever you want me to go. You know? Then it's pretty easy to put ourselves in Krishna's hands and leave it up to them, him. Yes, I am his servant. But as long as we hang on to, I'm the Bhakta leader, you know, then, oh, well, we want to stay here and maybe we have to come back to continue our important work here, you know. Or as long as we think I am mother, I am father, I am grandmother, you know, then we have the feeling, oh, I've still got the grandchildren. Who will take care of them? I want to see how they get married. And, you know, well, then we might have to come back just to see how they get married or something, you know. Yes. But if we identify with simply being servant, then, you know, it is not so difficult to just let go of all kinds of duties and positions and this and that, you know. Yeah, so that was Bhaja Govinda's story. And it was quite funny, actually, or not funny, but it was interesting, put it that way. One day, some Russian doctor appeared on the scene and gave him this idea, I can save you. I have a treatment for you, and I can save you. And Bhaja Govinda got all fired up. Okay, wow, there is some hope for me, you know. So and then when I was coming with my Krishna art book, he didn't even want to look at this anymore. No, the doctor was the one then, you know, and he was putting all his hopes in these treatments, you know. And I was a little upset. I was thinking, God, what is he doing, you know? Why is he giving this person some hope here rather than encouraging him to let him go, you know? So, and then he did all these treatments. The doctor put some all kinds of bark from different trees, tying it on his fingers and feet and this and that, or some mysterious treatments. And I thought, oh, God, you know, what is all this nonsense, you know? And it was amazing. For the first couple of days, he seemed to improve. That's the power of the mind. You know, if the mind is hopeful, he started eating again and drinking again. And I thought, my God, this can't be true. you know, what's happening here? You know, I mean, coming from a medical background, I knew he would not recover. His body was full of leukemia, you know, no hope. But all of a sudden he started eating and drinking. And I thought, no, can't be. You know, what is this? But then it only went for a couple of days, you know. And then it went down again, you know. And he realized, no hope, you know. So and then I started realizing, actually, this was also Krishna's arrangement that this doctor appeared on the scene because he had to go through this of just smashing the last hopes for survival. It had to be purified. You see? That's usually what people go through, you know, that if they have some desire to stay, they have to really come to this point where all hopes are completely smashed and frustrated. And most of the times, only then they're ready to accept. You see? So this was really Krishna's arrangement that this doctor appeared, you know, and he tried to, you know, hang on to the last string of hope there, doing all these treatments and just really purifying this last hope. And then after that, he came to a point where he said, yes, now I understand. Krishna wants me to go. And as soon as he came to that point, next morning, he was gone. Not next morning, actually in the evening. He left during Gaurati. And Jananivas Prabhu and Pankajangri were saying, yes, Panchatattva came during Gaurati to take him. You know? Yeah, so that's the thing, you know? Often these last hopes, they need to be thoroughly purified and be, you know, and only then we really come to the point of accepting. You know? But in any case, it gave me that realization that yes, these upadis, they're really blocking in that process of leaving, because as long as we identify with anything else except I am servant, then we have the feeling we have still some mission to perform here in this world. We haven't finished everything, you know. And then difficult to leave, you know. Yes. Yeah, so if we are fortunate, then Krishna has his ways of helping us to let go of these last attachments and upadis and false designations there, you know. Yes. I do want to discuss one more thing, but I don't want to overload you. Maybe we just see if there's any questions or comments about what we have discussed so far before we maybe talk about one other thing, one other aspect in the whole mystery of leaving one's body. Any questions, any comments? Okay, we have a few questions here. We'll start with you.
Can you understand that the last speak with your father?
Yes.
And since you said that he wasn't, you know, practicing the spirituality, I'm just curious, what did you do?
Well, I mean, it's definitely not that he didn't practice any, I mean, he didn't practice anything, but he was, you know, he was pretty familiar with Krishna consciousness, and he spent, you know, for 20 years, as I said, he was spending time in India. He had a very good service attitude. He was always helping me. I could ask him anything and he would just run and do it, you know. Yes, he had a very wonderful service attitude. And he kind of was admiring my lifestyle and, you know, always supporting me in whatever way he could. So he definitely had some some spiritual credit there. And he was always, whenever he met me, he was always saying, oh, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, every letter, every email, Hare Krishna. So, you know, he was chanting the holy name in a very innocent way. But that kind of chanting is actually Namabhas, actually, because it's very innocent and without any motive and, you know, that's Namabhas. Usually when we come to Krishna consciousness, we actually come in Namabhas. And then we have the choice of either going down to Namaparat or staying in Namabhas and working our way up. And most of us, unfortunately, shamefully we have to admit, I think we are going down to Namaparat, you know. Yes. So in any case, he definitely had some spiritual credit there, you know. He liked prasadam, you know. He gave up, practically, he gave up eating red meat. He still had a bit of fish and sometimes some chicken or something. But, you know, he became more and more vegetarian and so on. And especially the service attitude, I think that's what Krishna really accepted and why Krishna really helped him to have such a good departure, because of his service attitude. That's what Krishna looks at the most, actually, with what mood and feeling we serve. Yeah. So, something was there. And what I did, I simply tried, I was very, very careful not to impose any Krishna conscious thing on him, which he would not want to accept. You know, one has to be very sensitive, you know, and it has to be free from false ego, you know, that we don't want to, oh, okay, so now you have to do like I think is the right thing here or something. So one has to be very sensitive to really accompany and support a person. So I basically just explained to him, I was there for him. You know, and I explained to him, so now your body will gradually fall apart. But actually with you as spirit soul, this has nothing to do with you. You know, you will see your body falling apart and you will understand that you're actually not the body. And he was saying, well, I think I know this already. And I said to him, well, you might think you know, but now you will actually experience it. You know? Yes. So, and then I just gradually, I explained to him about the Vishnu Dutas and the Yama Dutas, you know. And I was saying to him, I want to try and make sure that the right team comes here, the Vishnu Dutas. And I asked him for permission if I can put some neck beads and tilak on him. And he said, yes, okay, put it on. And then I said, you probably don't believe all this anyway. And he said, no, of course not. He was laughing. Of course not. Yeah, so it like that, you know. And then I played very, very softly. I had one Mataji with me who helped me, because it's quite intense, you know, to be there for the person and at the same time cook, and that we stay an hour, you know, regulated life, and we get our rounds chanted and everything. So if you were alone, phew, it's too much, you know. So, and she was Bhakti Vaibhava Swami's disciple, so she had some nice, very gentle kirtan of Bhakti Vaibhava Swami. So we played it in a very, very soft way. So soft you could hardly hear it, but it still made a difference, you know. You could hear the Mahamantra there, you know. Yeah, so anyway, so with little things like that, you know, just being there for the person. And main thing is, when you assist the person leaving, you have to have at least a little bit of transcendental vision, you know, that you can see through all these external bodily things and you're not shocked by this and, you know, put off or something, but you understand. Even the body falls apart, it's the same personality is there. You know? You have to have that that ability to connect from soul to soul, you know. Very sweet service. Very nice. Because it's such an intimate thing where you can actually connect from soul to soul with a person, you know. And all these externals, they become unimportant, really, you know. Yes. Usually people really are so grateful if there is such a person around who's got that transcendental vision. Because at that moment, you really don't want anybody who's on the bodily platform there just lamenting about the body and, you know. One thing was pretty funny, I can share that. Actually, my father, he was married the second time, you know. And his second wife, she was not so super interested in Krishna consciousness. She never went with him to India. He left her at home and he went by himself, you know. Actually, last time before he left his body, he took her once to Vrindavan and so on, you know. But all the other trips, she stayed at home. So she you know, her vision was pretty mundane, you know. So, and she just tried to hug him and this and that. But at that, you know, in that phase, you don't want to have all this stuff going on, you know. Yes. So, and it was quite amazing. Just when he was just about to leave, his second wife tried to hug him. And he just pushed her off and just said, sit down. He ordered her, sit down, you know. And then I was helping him to turn on the side, you know, and she was sitting there, you know, so he was turning to the side, and then he just left. He just went into a very shallow, fast breathing, and then whoo, you could see something was coming out of his mouth. It was like he was, you know, choking and vomiting something up or something, you know, and then he was gone, you know. And I was just standing there chanting my japa and watching the whole thing, you know, putting tulsi in his mouth and everything. Yeah, so, and just before, you know, a few minutes before, you just ordered her, sit down, you know. And then he showed her how to leave, you know. It was quite amazing, you know. Yes. There were some other questions. You got the reply. What question was it?
In the beginning, you were talking about all this baggage that's not allowed in the spiritual world. And so these are attachments.
Yes, yes.
We may then think, oh, no attachments, and become cold, hard-hearted and impersonal.
Yes. Well, we have to apply the whole process properly. It's not a question of just, you know, rejecting, but we have to go through things, you know, in the proper purifying way. I mean, that's, for example, why Krishna gave us that system of the ashrams, you know. So this whole man-woman attraction, in most cases, we can't just deal with it by trying to bypass it. And, you know, well, Raghava is the example, you know. So attraction and aversion, just two sides of the same coin. You know, the heart has to really be freed, you know, from these attachments. And usually, as a rule, we get there by really going through the experiences within Krishna consciousness. You know? Within Krishna consciousness. Then you really come to a stage where it's all, you know, over and done with, and you've been there, done that, and it's gone, it's finished. You know? Well, I think that's why maybe for most people it is a question of several lifetimes, really. I kind of get that impression, really. Of course, we want to try and, you know, make it in one life, and we, you know, and who knows, maybe some of us are already continuing from previous life or something. But I've heard this also in classes. I can't remember, one Maharaj once said that maybe there's one lifetime in Nam Aparat, one lifetime in Nam Abbas, one lifetime in Sudanam, chanting, you know, three lifetimes. Was it? Huh? He's saying that? Yes, maybe I heard it from him, I can't remember. You know, so, but that's Krishna's mercy, that whatever, you know, advancement we make in one lifetime, next lifetime we continue there. You know? So there's no loss. But, you know, of course we should endeavor with great determination to really free us from all kinds of luggage there, you know, and all kinds of unwanted things. And I mean, that's why the whole Varnashram system, it gives the supportive, you know, the supportive, yeah, system there to free us from all kinds of luggage. That's why, you know, Prabhupada says, no gentleman remains in family life until the point of death. You know? Because if you stay in family life until the point of death, well, there's a good chance you know, you lie on your deathbed and you worry, oh, who will take care of my son and this and that, and well, you know, then there's still so much business there which is not, you know, brought to an end, and you have to come back and finish all that, you know. So that's why, you know, the Bhagavatam is full of examples where great personalities, kings, they just divide up their kingdom, they put their sons in charge, and they leave to the forest, you know. So, all right, you know, Kali Yuga, there's not much forest left where we can live or something. But it's a matter of understanding the principles, extracting the principles and applying them in our life, you know. That's the point. But Vanaprastha is basically not established yet, you know, Vanaprastha Ashram. Yeah, so there's still a lot of work to be done to establish things properly, you know. Yeah. What else? Yes. Yes, but what happened? Well, you know, that's the thing. Often we don't tell the story properly. We say, oh, he just chanted Narayan, and oh, he just, you know, went back to Godhead. But no, it was not like that, you know. The Vishnu Dutas, the Yama Dutas came, and he heard the whole discussion. Yes, he got the association of the Vishnu Dutas, and that brought him back to his senses, you know? And then he lamented about all his past sinful activities. So, and then his life was extended. And then he went to Haridwar and engaged in devotional service. And only then he went back to Godhead. Yes. So, and I mean, ultimately we can say, well, Ajameel, that's also us, you know, because at some stage we've also been actually, you know, with Krishna, but then we left Krishna's association, and here we are, we're hearing, we're getting transcendental knowledge, and now it's up to us to take this seriously and engage in pure devotional service, you know, and then we go back. So very often we hear story in a very simplified version. Yes. Yes, well, we have to understand these stories more deeply. Otherwise, very easily we can come to the wrong conclusions. We can say, oh, well, what's the harm? We can just live like Arjamir and engage in all kinds of nonsense activities. And let's call our son Narayan. And then at the time of death, we will call Narayan. And happy end, you know. Yeah, but that's not the moral of the story, you know. No. Yes. What else? Yes.
How was it possible that Vishnu Dutas and Yama Dutas saw each other? Because Vishnu Dutas is supposed to have spiritual bodies and Yama Dutas to hear them.
I don't know. But in any case, they both appeared there. That's what it says in the Bhagavatam. And they had a whole discussion there. So somehow, maybe they didn't see each other as such, but they perceived each other. You know?
I think it's a blessing for Ajamila here. It's a blessing for this group. Together they connect.
Well, I mean, you know, you can perceive even bodies which are not visible to your eyes, you can perceive. There's such kind of perception, you know, and subtle platform, definitely. I mean, I just remember an Arjamir story of the modern days of ISKCON. You want to hear it? I was not planning to tell it, but now it just came to my mind. It's quite an extraordinary story. Story from Bangladesh. All right. So one day, some money disappeared from the deity department. Some money, some jewelry. And the devotees were wondering who took this money. They announced, please bring it, give it back, whoever took it, you know, and the devotee making the announcement was making this funny comparison. Yes, even Lord Brahma got an illusion and stole, you know, Krishna's calves and cowherd boys. And, you know, the way to rectify is by giving them back. So please bring back the money that was stolen. So then some jewelry reappeared, but the money left, didn't reappear. So then one devotee came up with a almost mysterious trick of finding a thief. And the trick goes that you have to chew some raw rice grains. You call all the devotees together and everybody chews on some raw rice. And that person who cannot make a liquid paste out of that, he's the thief. And apparently some mantras were chanted to this raw rice there, you know. So I was there at the time, so I thought, all right, let me join this experiment. So I was sitting there with all the pujaris. We started with the pujaris. We were sitting all in a circle there, chewing on some rice after Mangalarti, you know, early morning. And then we had this banana leaves there in front of us, and we were spitting out this paste, you know. And this devotee who was chanting the mantras to the rice, he was going around checking. And sure enough, there was one person where this rice was completely dry. It was not a liquid paste. And then he said, okay, well, this looks very suspicious. So I put it back in your mouth, chew a little more. So, and he did that and chewed a little more, and it was even more dry. Yeah, oh, you're laughing. The story doesn't end so well. You will not laugh in a minute. So, and then, you know, he said to everybody else, okay, everybody else can leave the room. This person stays, you know, the Bengali way of doing things. And then, you know, he just said, so where's the money? So then this devotee was a Brahmachari. He got up and left the room and he went to his room. No, he actually went to the bathroom and he had a little bottle of poison in his pocket, just in case he would be caught. And in the bathroom, he drank this poison. And it was really heavy-duty poison, the most poisonous poison you can find, you know. And then he was going back in his room. And luckily, the devotees immediately noticed because such a poisonous smell came from his mouth. And immediately, we rushed him to the hospital. And lucky it was early morning, so there was no traffic jam there. And we had the idea to send the bottle of poison with him, you know, one devotee was going with him, to show to the doctors what it was. So when the doctors saw this bottle, they said, no chance, he will not survive, you know. So, but they did some whole treatment there, whatever they had to do, I don't know. So, and then at night, one devotee stayed with him. And in the middle of the night, that devotee who took the poison, he turned to his companion and he said, I think I'm going to leave in a couple of hours, within the next, you know, couple of hours or something. So let's chant the Nisshingadev prayers. So and in the middle of the night on the intensive care unit there, there were just the two of them. They were chanting the Nisshingadev prayers and Maha Mantra afterwards. And, well, the next day he was out of hospital, you know. And all the doctors were really amazed. So, and then this boy, he told me, he said, you know what happened at that midnight there, at the night? I actually had the darshan of the Yamadutas. They came and they tried to take me 3 times. And he was describing what they looked like. And he was so, you know, you could see he didn't make it up. You know, this was actually true. He was describing, oh, they looked all black with horns and ropes. And 2 were at my feet and 2 at my head, you know. And 3 times they tried to take me. And that's when he chanted the Nisshingadev prayers, you know. And because he chanted the Nisshingadev prayers, they actually couldn't take him. Yes. So that was a real Ajamir story, you know. So Krishna extended his life a little bit, you know. Well, he's still around. It happened a couple of years ago. Took him quite a while to get over this experience. Yes, but it certainly made him a stronger devotee, you know. He became more serious. You know, after all that, you know, and it was a real Ajamir story because he was actually a nice devotee. He was one of our pujaris. But then due to some political things going on there, you know, he was pushed a bit aside there and then he got into some bad association and then he became weak and then he started, you know, stealing some money there, you know. It was a real Ajamir story, you know. Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, so, and that darshan of the Yamadutas, and it was the Yamadutas, not the Vishnudutas, even though he had, you know, Kantimala and everything on, you know. But obviously, if you try and commit suicide, not such an auspicious way to leave, you know. So, it's a job for the Yamadutas then, you know. So that's also pretty sobering to understand, you know. but the Yamadusas can also come, you know, even though we might, you know, we might have a dhoti or sari and neck beads on or something. Yes, so and his good fortune was that he took shelter of the holy name and the Nisshinadev prayers, you know. At least he was that much Krishna conscious still, that he chanted them, and they couldn't take him. Yes. Pretty amazing story, isn't it? Okay, so what do we do? Shall I share one more thing about leaving one's body, or is it enough? All right. You know, one very common thing people say is that they say, I'm actually not so afraid of dying, but I'm afraid of the pain that comes along. Right? Isn't it? So now the interesting thing is that pain is actually an experience on the mental platform. It is actually experienced in the mind, pain. It's a very subjective feeling. It has nothing to do with the soul, of course. And interestingly, we know if the mind is fully concentrating and focusing on one thing, you can overcome the experience of pain. Right? Like, I can tell you a little example of my own life. Before I became a devotee, I used to play handball. And because I'm pretty tall, I was always the goalkeeper. You know, I had to be the goalie, how we say in Australia. So, and sometimes I was breaking my fingers in this thing, trying to catch the ball. That little one is still a little funny here from one of the handball experiences. And I remember when I broke this finger, I was in a very exciting match. And in the middle of the match, I could feel, you know, the finger was broken. But because I had handball gloves on, goalie gloves, I didn't see it. Actually, the finger stood off, you know, like this, to the side, you know. But because I had gloves on, I didn't see. But I could feel, oh, something was wrong there. But my mind was so focused on winning this match that I actually did not experience any pain. Nothing. Nothing whatsoever. I continued playing the whole game for half an hour with this finger standing off like that, and I didn't feel any pain because the mind was so absorbed in something else. You see? Same principle is there, for example, in war times, you know, when a soldier is fighting in the war, sometimes they are able to do really extraordinary things because the mind is so absorbed in surviving, you know, that they don't even feel that they lost an arm and a leg or whatever, you know, or their fingers, how to survive and how to save their companion there or whatever, that the mind is so absorbed in something else, you can transcend the level of pain. You see? Huh? Makes sense? Also, you know, it's a well-known thing, for example, mothers, you know, having their child in danger or something, they can also manifest extraordinary forces, you know, just to survive and save the child, and they don't feel any pain or nothing, you know, just when the mind is fully focused in something, you know. So now death is basically that test, whether we are able to transcend that level of pain, whether the mind is so absorbed in Krishna consciousness, in remembering Krishna, that that's the test, whether we transcend that bodily platform. That's what it means, basically, to be transcendental, actually, to transcend the bodily platform. And pleasure, pain, this is the bodily platform. It's an experience in the mind. You see? That's the test. Yeah? So that's why it is so important to really practice absorbing the mind very deeply in remembering Krishna. So this whole death experience, you know, Krishna is testing us in that. How is our subtle body of the mind really fully spiritualized? Is there only Krishna there and nothing else? If there's only Krishna and nothing else, then we will be able to transcend the level of pain. But if there's not, if the mind is not filled with Krishna intensely, well, then we will not be able to transcend the level of pain, you know. Then, any little pain will distract us, you know. So that's what we are basically tested in, you see. And I mean, one wonderful example was really how Bhaktitirtha Swami left this world. I don't know if you have heard about this, you know, how Radha Swami was spending the last 6 weeks with him. Actually, after, you know, Bhaktitirtha Swami left, Radha Swami once gave a 5-hour Sunday feast lecture. 5 hours. Quite amazing. I don't think I have it anymore, but I heard it. I listened to the whole thing, 5 hours. He shares all his experiences with Bhaktitirtha Swami, how he accompanied him in these last 6 weeks, you know. And, you know, there Radha Swami was helping him to absorb the mind, you know. They were reading every day for so many hours Chaitanya Charitamrita. You know, actually, Bhaktitirtha Swami really gave a very nice example of how to leave this world, you know. He also was giving up all these upadis of Guru Maharaj and this and that. He was saying, don't call me Guru Maharaj anymore. This is not what I am. I don't want to hear it anymore. And he was just, you know, actually, Prabhupada says one should, you know, perform nirjan bhajan. Meaning that one should, you know, really in the very last phase of life, one should just surround oneself with a few very confidential associates and caretakers and really leave behind, you know, all these connections and upadis. So Bhaktitirtha Swami set that example. He said, no more Guru Maharaj, no more Bhaktitirtha Swami, I don't want to hear it anymore. This is not what I am. I am simply servant of the servant of the servant, and that's all, you know. And he went in seclusion for the last, you know, I don't know, days or a couple of weeks or something. But, and Radha Swami was there with him, just reading Chaitanya Charitamrita, evening kirtans, just in a very small confidential group, absorbing the mind, absorbing, you know. And Bhaktitirtha Swami got to such a high level of absorption, Radha Swami very nicely tells this, how at some stage, you know, not some stage, but, you know, Bhaktitirtha Swami actually became so joyful and so happy from this absorption in Krishna consciousness, the doctors were all amazed. They were all amazed. How is it possible? You know, from a material point of view, You know, he had already one leg amputated. He was also a skeleton. You know, he must have felt so much pain, the bones, you know, pressing against the nerves. So skinny, cancer was already everywhere in the spine and whatever, you know. So his whole body was finished. You know, and the doctors were amazed. How is it possible? How can a person be so joyful in such condition? Not possible. You know, so that's the power of being absorbed in remembering Krishna, you know. And he came to the point where he was calling out, life cannot become any better than this. Yes, you know, body completely finished. But the mind completely absorbed in remembering Mahaprabhu's pastimes. And he was saying, we are not reading Chaitanya Charitamrita, we are actually entering Chaitanya Charitamrita. Life cannot become better than this. And he was saying, for nothing in this world, I would want to exchange my position. Even if you give me $1 million, I would not want to be in any other position as I am now. Yes. Yes. That's, you know, that's how one is meant to leave the body as a devotee, actually, in deep absorption, transcending completely the level of pain. You know, he didn't even take any painkillers. His painkillers were Chaitanya Charitamrita. Yes, yes, yes. So that's how he left, you know. Yes, very wonderful example, you know. That's why it is said, there's one, I think Prabhupada says this in the purport. Let me see. Yes, that's also Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya 486. In the purport, Prabhupada says, it is said that when one sees apparent unhappiness or distress in a perfect Vaishnava, it is not at all unhappiness for him. Rather, it is transcendental bliss. Right? You understand? So, you know, Bhakti Tirtha Swami's apparent position was distress, unhappiness. But for perfect devotee, it is not distress at all. It is actually transcendental bliss. Because that distressing situation, he takes so shelter of Krishna, and Krishna shows himself much more tangibly there, that actually externally it looks like suffering, but for a pure devotee, it actually becomes transcendental bliss. By taking shelter, by absorbing the mind, and just transcending the bodily platform. You see? So, but obviously, this needs some practice. It needs some practice and preparation. You know? And I mean, how often we might be in the situation where we are sick and, oh, we can't change our rounds, you know. Oh, my God, you know. There we see how far we are away, you know, from that kind of absorption, you know. So that's the point. This happiness, distress, pleasure, pain, this is actually all the mental platform. So, and death is that test. Can we transcend that mental platform? And the only way to transcend it is by fully absorbing oneself. You know? And of course, we can only endeavor, and Krishna also has to be merciful, you know, and we need the Vaishnava's help. Yes. Definitely at that moment, even more than anything. You know, if we are there alone, not so easy to absorb the mind. So that's why Radha Swami, he cancelled all his travels and he just stayed with Bhaktitirtha Swami to serve him in that most important phase of life, you know. Yeah. So we've got a few nice examples there of how to leave this world, you know. So we better get ready. We better prepare. So of course now we can spend the last minutes very briefly addressing that topic of how to prepare. Right? So as I mentioned yesterday, it's all a question of relationship. If there's a relationship there, you know, then not so fearful. Then all right, Krishna, you've been waiting for so many lifetimes. I'm ready. You can do with me whatever you like. You know, we can put ourselves in Krishna's hands if there's a relationship there. If there's no relationship there, will be difficult. Then we will not want to go to him because there's no relationship there. Huh? I was telling yesterday the story where this Madhuji in Ukraine said, you know, when she was about to leave and devotees asked her, so you want to go to Krishna? And she said, no. And devotees were shocked. What? You don't want to go to Krishna? And she answered, well, I actually have no relationship with Krishna. My voice is getting tired. Yeah, so it's all a question of relationship. And as I was saying, our fear of death simply shows how little of a relationship is there. You know? As our relationship becomes more and more established and tangible in our life, we will proportionally lose our fear of death. Definitely. Right? Logical, isn't it? If there's no relationship, then we are hanging on to, you know, the relationships of the nonsensical stage performance, you know? And we think we find some shelter there and, oh, let's stay for 6 more months or something, you know? Or 1 more year by hook or by crook, you know? This is all a sign that the relationship is not there. Right? Yes. Yes. I mean, often I'm thinking, you know, why are we so desperate running to this healer and that healer and, oh my God, you know, if it looks like that's it, so why not just concentrate on getting ready and go, you know? What's the difference whether we go a couple of years earlier or later, you know? And why delaying? You know, why not go? Well, we can only have that attitude if the relationship is there. That's the point. So it's all, the preparation is all about establishing the relationship. So and how do we establish the relationship? You tell me. Chanting the holy name, yes. But there's also so many secrets to chanting the holy name. And one secret is that when we chant, we have to mindfully turn towards Krishna and call out to him. But so often, we leave Krishna completely out of the picture when we chant, right? We just wander around, look at this, the birds and the trees and the flowers and the shops and this and that, and the mind is wandering, making plans. And where's Krishna? You know? We can actually spend a whole lifetime in so-called Krishna consciousness and we completely can leave Krishna out of the picture. You know? It's possible. Yes, it is. I'm afraid to say, but I think it goes on a lot. You know? that we are so busy with so many big plans and ambitions and this and that. But hang on, what about my relationship with Krishna? Am I investing into that? Am I doing anything for that? You know, we are so much into externals, you know, but the internals we tend to neglect. Yes, right? So the chanting will not establish our relationship with Krishna if it's just some mechanical blabbering. That kind of chanting will not do anything for this relationship with Krishna. We can chant for lifetimes and absolutely nothing will happen. The only kind of chanting which will establish the relationship with Krishna is when we deep in the heart, we really make this, you know, endeavor, we do this internal work of actually really turning towards Krishna and calling out to him, please accept me, please allow me to serve. I know, Krishna, you are there. That kind of chanting will establish the relationship with Krishna. It's very clear. If we spend every day 2 hours endeavoring like this, turning towards Krishna, calling out to him, surely something will happen in that relationship. It will become more tangible reality. Right? Relationships don't develop automatically just by time passing. No, they don't. Even, you know, anybody who is married here knows, you know, you have to make some endeavor. You have to be mindful of the other person's presence there. You know, you can easily, even within married life, you can completely ignore each other and live past each other, you know, being busy with your own thing there. So then the relationship will not develop and become deeper, you know. So there has to be a mindfulness there that the other person is present there. There has to be that, you know, longing to serve, that, you know, endeavor, some sacrifice, some tapasya for each other, this, that. That makes it, well, any relationship get to deeper levels. Even brahmachari ashram, same thing. You can easily just completely live past each other there, just having Hari Bol relationships. Hari Bol Prabhu, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, how are you? Good, thanks, Hari Bol. You know, and that's it, you know. Yes. Hari Bol relationships are pretty common these days, you know. So for any deeper relationship, there has to be some conscious effort and endeavor. And of course also for Krishna. It will not happen automatically just by being for 10 years in the Brahmachari Ashram. You will not have automatically deeper relationships. No. Or by being married or whatever, you know. No, there has to be some conscious endeavor. So same thing with Krishna. We have to make conscious endeavor to develop the relationship. And through the chanting, that's how we develop it. Because as we know, Krishna and his holy name, non-different. So by chanting the holy name and mindfully turning towards Krishna, feelingly from the heart, calling out to him, I need you. Once Prabhupada was asked, what is the meaning of the Maha Mantra? And Prabhupada gave a very nice answer, as usual. He said, it means, I need help. Very nice, you know, purport explanation of the meaning of the Maha Mantra. That's actually what it means. I need help. Maha Mantra is not, you know, we can give so many elaborate esoteric meanings, what the syllables all mean. It's all useless if we don't understand how it is meant to be chanted with that feeling, I need help. You know, so that is the deeper understanding of the Maha Mantra. You know? So only that kind of chanting will do something in our relationship with Krishna. Satchinanda Swami gives this nice example of the empty medicine capsule. Right? You heard that one? So empty medicine capsule is that kind of chanting which is done without turning mindfully towards Krishna. Just blabbering something, doing so many other things, mind is distracted, thinks of so many things, makes plans, what the shopping list, does that, what to do, does that, you know, that's the empty medicine capsule. From outside, it looks like the real thing. Looks exactly like the real thing. But when you open it, oh, empty, no medicine outside. Therefore, no effect. Yes. Sobering news. Yes, we discuss this always in the Holy Name retreats. Sometimes people, they almost fall into a crisis when they realize, wow, I've been taking empty medicine capsules for the last 30 years. Yes. Yes. Yes, so the chanting, that's where it's at. But chanting deeply, not just mechanical, ritualistic, you know, just finishing the rounds. You know, that kind of chanting will not do anything for our relationship with Krishna. We have to really turn towards Krishna in the heart and call out to him, longing for the relationship, longing to serve. Not so easy. Tomorrow when we chant, we can try. It's actually hard work. Chanting is hard work. You know? Yes. And only that kind of chanting really establishes the relationship. So that's the way how we prepare, mainly through the chanting. Yes. Chanting and service attitude. They are the main two tracks on which we move back home, back to Godhead. Okay. 6 to 8. Any questions? Yes. Well, the point is, you only develop that vision of seeing Krishna everywhere if you chant. So the chanting, I mean, even all the religions agree in this. You know, hallowed be thy name. In German, geheiligt werde dein Name. All religions have that practice of the bees. Christians, Muslims, Buddhists, everybody. But it's all lost and forgotten, you know? Which Christians are still chanting on the beads? All lost. But all the religions agree in this, that, you know, the Lord and His holy name are non-different, and one is meant to connect with the Lord by chanting His holy name. And because it's all lost and forgotten in all religions, that's why Mahaprabhu came and reestablished it for everyone and all. You know? So that the holy name is the first way of how to connect with Krishna, definitely. Not worshipping the deities. You know? One might think, well, why is not worshipping the deities, offering a flower, you know, taking darshan, why is that not the first way to connect with Krishna? Well, what do our eyes see? They only see a wooden form there. You know? So Krishna gives the vision only through chanting. By chanting, you know, we connect and then Krishna reveals himself. So then we can see more than just a wooden form there. That's why we should only worship the deities when we're Brahman initiated. Brahman initiation means, well, we must have chanted already for a few years. So hopefully we have chanted sincerely and Krishna is revealing himself a little bit. And then we see more than just a wooden or marble or metal statue there, you know. And only then we are qualified to serve the deities, actually. So the holy name, Sri Harinam Prabhu, he is our first deity, the holy name. And only then, by purification through the chanting, then we learn to see Krishna everywhere. You know, and we see how Maya works, how Krishna works, and as our relationship with Krishna is more and more established, then we can see every spirit soul as part and parcel of Krishna, and we can become, you know, true friend and well-wisher to every living entity. But all of that just develops through the chanting, nothing else. Yes. So the chanting, that's where it's at. But we have to endeavor to get on deeper levels. It's not done just by, you know, we often are so taking the chanting so superficially, so lightly. It's just the numbers. How many rounds are you chanting? Oh, 16. You know, but nobody asks, well, what is the quality, you know? And it's already normal, as accepted as normal thing to just wander around in the streets, drive in the car with the jumper beats. This is all nonsense, actually, in plain English, plain words. It's not chanting. Empty medicine capsules. Yes. Chanting is a whole deep, deep science. Yes. Deep, deep thing. It's not such an external thing of just, okay, 16 rounds blabbering something around. And same with kirtan. Kirtan is not just having fun and some good music or something. No. Same thing. It's connecting with Krishna, calling out. Yes. It's a whole deep transcendental affair. It's not just getting together and having a good music session here. Yeah. Okay, any other question? Yes, last question.
Well, I was saying that when one devotee for one day, tell me, I've 16 years, don't have almost nothing for Gucci, for one day, for Christmas. I think it now. Why?
Well, see, we have to be clear that chanting the holy name actually means association with Krishna. But we only associate with Krishna when we are mindfully turning to him, right? So that's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the inattentiveness in chanting, that's the root cause of all other offenses. So if we are inattentive, if we ignore Krishna, we call upon Krishna to come, but then we ignore him, we turn our back to him, we have other things to do at the same time there, then we are not associating with Krishna, actually. We are not. You see? So, we only get benefit if we associate. You know? You imagine you invite your Guru Maharaj to your home, and then he comes, and you just turn your back towards him, and you're busy with more important things, and you ignore him. Well, this is not, you will not get any benefit here. In fact, you will get some reactions because it's offensive. Right? Yes. So the same thing we are doing in chanting when we are not getting on deeper levels of chanting, how we are meant to chant. You know? We are actually not associating. We are actually not chanting the holy name. It's not the holy name. We are simply chanting some alphabet. But holy name means non-different with Krishna. So that means, you know, we have to associate with Krishna. We have to mindfully turn towards him. Then we are only associating. Only then it's the holy name. So that's explained in Harinam Chintamani. It is said there, you know, that this kind of chanting, which is in forgetfulness of Krishna, this is simply shadow, reflection. That's one problem, but, yes, that's one problem, but also another problem, that's how it's described in Harinam Chintamani, that the Sambandha Gyan is not really hitting the heart. It is simply theory. Yes, yes, I know I'm servant of Krishna. Yes, yes, I know. But what do? We make all kinds of plans to enjoy. Well, it means I don't know. You see? So Sambandha Gyan has to really deeply hit the heart. We have to deeply understand, yes, who am I? Who is Krishna? What is this whole world about? If Sambandha Gyan hits the heart, then we will feel regretful. We will feel, oh, I'm such a rascal. I have ignored this relationship for so many lifetimes. Now let me turn towards Krishna. I want this relationship. I want to do something there. But we don't really feel so regretful. We think, oh, well, I'm a pretty cool guy here. You know, I've done so many cool things and it's all right. And yeah, I'm okay. And, you know, so that means Sambandha Gyan has not hit the heart. It's simply theory. It's Gyan. It's not Vigyan. And that's what Harinam Chintamani describes. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says, if the chanting is not done with Sambandha Gyan deeply understood, then there will be not this push to really turn towards Krishna, because you haven't even realized that you have an eternal relationship with Krishna. You see? So that's why the hearing is so important, hearing again and again, you know? That hopefully makes the Sambandha Gyan sink deeper there on the heart level, you know, hearing the Bhagavatam. And that's why hearing the Bhagavatam is kind of the, you know, the foundation to good japa. Without Bhagavatam, hard to get on deeper levels of chanting, because consciousness gets grown over and you forget who you are and what this whole world is all about and this and that, you know. So that's why Bhagavatam is so important, that Bhagavatam becomes a real important part of our life, you know, to hear the Bhagavatam. And that will deepen the Sambandha Gyan, and then we can more deeply chant, you know. Yes. But main thing is we can't be lazy, you know. We have to actually overcome this internal laziness, and we have to endeavor. We have to put an end to this inattentiveness, you know, on the platform of the body, just walking around and chanting while we do other things. You know, this is nonsense. We have to kick it out of our life. Yeah. Okay, so We're not going to start a holy name retreat now. Okay, well, we are leaving tomorrow after the Bhagavatam class. So for all those of you who I will not see tomorrow, thank you very much for your association, for your eagerness to associate and to come together and give me a chance to share something. So it was a great pleasure to visit you all. And maybe one day we'll meet again. Okay.
Why maybe?
Huh?
Why maybe?
Well, who knows, you know? Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki, Swami Veda Bhaktivinoda ki, Guru Premanandi.